Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
Our guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. Rick, where are you speaking to us from today?
I am in the sunny state of North Carolina. I'm enjoying the autumn here, and which is something I don't get down in Florida.
You just get hurricanes. Of course, Carolina gets them, too.
Speaking of weather, yeah, I don't know. I belong to a sailing club in Palm Beach. It's off Flagler Avenue, and I've only just this morning received an email that said the boathouse took on some damage. But that's right on the water. I'm a little bit away from the water, so I'm just kind of crossing my fingers.
Rick, the U.S. election and its effects on the markets, what have you seen so far?
Well, I'm astounded, really. You know, I went into this expecting a red wave, like quite a few people, certainly on the red side of the aisle. And what we got was the same almost exact 50-50 split that we've seen the last few elections. And what that suggests is that the electorate really is split almost precisely 50-50, with 50% being on basis of the outcome, they're mentally retarded. And I'm not going to insult anybody by suggesting one side or the other is retarded, but that's what it comes down to. I would say, by and large, that the Republicans fielded much better candidates. The Democrats had some people who arguably should never have been in the running. And the fact that some of those candidates who shouldn't have been in the running actually won election to high office, it's really very telling. It means that people don't even care. The voters don't care whether the candidate only has 15% of his brain working, or 35 or 60% or whatever. They'll vote for him anyway, just so that he can keep the seat warm on the red, the blue side of the aisle. Or the red, I guess I have to say, in fairness, although it didn't, in a practical way, apply to this election. So really, we're at the point where you can say the economy was the issue, and the pollsters still talk about it as the issue, but we've just proven that there are no issues anymore. People don't care about the issues, even though they may confront them in their daily lives, and even though those issues may have great practical significance to us as individuals, when we go to vote, we don't really care.
So it's just whether it's an R or a D on the ballot, that's what you vote for, and you don't look at what they stand for or what the issues are or what their promises are.
Right.
Yeah. Now,
And I think if I had this, the best thing to come of the election, at least from my standpoint, and I vote Republican or Libertarian, is that that DeSantis will have a chance to challenge Trump. You know, I voted for Trump. I like the things that Trump did. I'm not a big fan of his personally, but I think that he was very effective as a president. But the election this time demonstrated there is no way he will win an election. You know, it's if you take the supposed centrists and see how they split this time, there's no way Trump's going to carry them. And it's been demonstrated in this election beyond a shadow of a doubt that he couldn't possibly win in 2024. So I think that gives DeSantis a shot, and he is certainly a winner.
Taking a look at the markets, everything down slightly. Was there disappointment that there wasn't a red wave?
No, I think the market is correctly diagnosing the results here, examining them and saying, what the hell? It can't, there's nothing it can infer. You know, there's nothing that happened that can translate even to some excuse for an economic scenario. You know, the newspapers were all the idiots who inflict the news on us, who invent the news each day. They're gonna draw some conclusion from whatever the market does. But I think the market's got it right here, and it's saying, you know, there's no way you can say anything about this election and what it means for the stock market and the economy.
Now, the bloodbath that's taking place at Twitter with half the staff being let go, although apparently, like most mass layoffs, they cut some pretty select people that they're asking to come back. Other high-tech firms as well telling their staff, some of you aren't going to be around by Christmas. What does that mean for the stock market and investors?
Well, I mean, it's such a dramatic ending for the boom era. You know, the high-tech companies they're actually laying off people. And we had the best inkling we had of what was really happening was a couple months ago when Amazon said, you know, we're gonna close down some of the warehouses and we're gonna scale back our growth plans. We're not talking about some idiot company run by idiots, for idiots like Twitter, which has no revenues and no skin in the game. You know, all it does is lose money. We're talking about a real company that's run by a genius. And you know, Amazon was going to get it right. So here was Amazon, the best run company in this country from the standpoint of we can make money. I mean, they can even make money with overpriced groceries at Whole Foods is how good they are. So that was it. And of course, so the other tech companies have fallen in line, and we're seeing layoffs at Facebook and everywhere else. And that's going to have a big ripple effect, because now all of a sudden these people who were good for $200,000-$400,000 a year and living pretty well in San Francisco are going to have to find another place to live. So we've got San Francisco, the real estate collapse there is going to come on quite a bit more quickly than it will in other places. But we've already got a silent housing crash developing, to the extent that the people in the expensive homes, you know, upwards of $1.5-2 million, who don't really have to sell and don't have mortgages, they're saying, "Screw it! I don't have to sell. I'll just hang tough." So they've kind of sat tight with their high prices, while the bids have dropped away. You know, even as we debate whether there's a recession, of course there's a recession. More than 80% of the Americans think are either somewhat dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with the state of the economy. So whether we're splitting hairs on definitions of inflation or recession, it's having its impact on the housing market. But the crash so far has been mostly invisible, because there's very little transaction volume. There are almost no houses being sold, simply because the buyer would have to either come up with cash or pay, you know, finance it at 7%. So the price discovery has completely dried up. But you can bet the bidders who were in bidding wars a year ago are quickly receding from the offers.
What about those companies that bought up tracts of housing sight unseen, hoping that they could turn them into rentals or Airbnbs? What's going to happen to them?
Well, we've been talking about that, and I think for the last year, maybe 2 years even, I've said they were dead ducks. I knew a guy who worked for one of those companies, and they sent him to Denver, where I lived at that time, with a blank checkbook. You know, his instruction was to just buy anything. They did, and they even put a lot, they bought the top really in real estate, and of course Zillow was the most obvious. They were the first to pay. You're a little bit challenged to bet against some of the other big players, like, you know, BlackRock. When they come and buy something, they really know what they're doing. But in this case, they had you know, infinite trust in the market and in the ability of tenants to keep paying the rent. And, you know, that assumption is completely wrong. So they not only bought the top, you know, for spec real estate that they were going to convert into rentals, But the refurbishments, as I understand it from my friend in that business, that they didn't really care how much they put into making these homes perfectly rentable. So the refurbishments were usually done kind of top grade, and they were taking their instruction from the bean counters, who said, you know, who the hell cares if you want to put a Viking range in this place, and you know, all the high end kitchen appliances, it doesn't matter. We've got 10 years to get it back, and if you extrapolate out the rent increases we've had, you know, just the last few years, look, we're going to come out way ahead. But it's that extrapolation, the straight line idea, that whatever we've been seeing over the last 3 years will continue to infinity. That's where they've all gone wrong. So that's going to exacerbate the housing crash. And, you know, the one thing I know we've discussed before was that when you're renting a house to somebody, you're manifestly renting to someone who can't afford to buy the house. So you're starting with the credit risk, even though it's not quite what we experienced in 2007 and 8, where you had essentially, you know, everybody drawn into the market as a buyer, almost invariably at a price they couldn't afford.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, the International Energy Agency says it told OPEC Plus, please don't cut production. You're just going to make the coming recession even worse. But OPEC, of course, said, no, it's our belief that cutting production and higher prices are the way to go. Is there such thing as international cooperation anymore?
Hardly, no. We're internationally at war in one way or another. And if a smarty pants at OPEC had answered that question, he would have said, well, you know, the recession's going to fix that problem for you. And it will, you know. I don't, oil's got a lot of discounting to do, as far as I'm concerned, to get down to reasonable. And I have to say, though, I've never quite understood the market for crude, especially examining it in the light of certain realities like the implosion of China's economy. China, of course, is the biggest marginal buyer. They price oil at the margin. And so I haven't quite understood oil's screaming rally. And I even have a target out there myself, a technical target that is above 110. But I tend to lean toward whatever my technicals are telling me, because when I'm trying to form an opinion based on facts, I've gotten into trouble many times. You know, you don't want to examine the stock market in the light of facts, because the market is not a creature of fact. It's a creature of fear and greed, fantasy, of psychosis. So you know, I'm sort of on the fence, really, with respect to crude. I can see a case for somewhat higher prices, certainly above $100, but I'm just looking for the first sign on the chart, a technical reason for assuming that it's going lower.
Now, before we started our interview, we talked about how Bitcoin had a sudden plunge in price, about $3,000 roughly. What's the story there in the cryptos?
Well, I've never heard a compelling explanation as to why Bitcoin should be worth even $5, much less $69,000, which is where it peaked. All right. I can say that it has a little bit of value, you know, a couple of bucks, to the extent that it's a great way to record a transaction in a secure fashion. All right. It's the blockchain technology behind crypto is good, and I think it has a shelf life that we haven't seen yet. But the many, you know, but when you come right down to cases, nobody ever used Bitcoin to buy anything. I would say that, 98% of the use of it was purely speculative. People were buying it, simply for appreciation. And Bitcoin never even got to compete much with credit cards and other ways we have of doing transactions and that are actually pretty secure themselves. So I never sought a case for Bitcoin. And right now, I was blathering last week about how, you know, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, why isn't this thing coming down below 10,000 like I've expected? And I got so frustrated with it that I declaimed it to the world, or at least to my readership, that there are zero sellers of crypto below 18,000. And my conclusion was it's really basing at 18,000. It's gathering confidence on the strength of the idea that nobody seems to be able to push it below 18,000. So even then, I had just limited projections to the upside. We can see that many of the really big players are trapped at much, much higher prices, and you start to feel the weight of their desire to get out around 25,000. And that's so here's Bitcoin skittering along, and I thought it was about to take off, but lo and behold, we've definitely found some sellers below 18,000. Bitcoin at this set moment trading 16,946. It's been about 60 bucks lower. So, you know, I don't know what caused it, really. I don't keep up with that side of the Bitcoin world. I just watch it on the charts, which have given me a pretty good handle on a price movement.
So with the cryptos falling apart, high tech falling apart, is there any place people should be looking at, gold or the U.S. dollar, something like that?
Well, I was way premature in we talked about a barbell strategy, and you know, this was essentially a hedge using treasury bonds and bills, T-notes and treasury, longer-term treasury debt, versus gold. And you know, if the treasury part of it was kind of on hold, and it still is. I'm waiting for interest rates to hit what I think will be a high on the long-term bond at 4. Let me take a look here. I keep getting mixed up because I raised the target at some point, but I think it'll be around 4.65%, and so that leaves some room for bond prices to fall. So you shouldn't be in a hedge quite this early. But the other half of it was gold, and gold, of course, is it's underperformed would be to put it mildly. You know, since last March, when we had COMEX topping at around over $2,100, we've come down to a low, recent low, of 1,620 or so. So there are some interesting things technically happening in gold that suggest at least I should be looking, we should be looking for a bottom here. It's possible, but I don't think so, but I'm at least let's say more open-minded to that than I might have been a few weeks ago.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
your backyard, I think. You know, I'm always reminded of my friend Charles Hugh Smith puts out, I think you talk to him now and then, he puts out something, his own blog, a news, kind of a easy letter on Saturdays, and he's been getting his garden in order for quite a while. You know, I guess you could say he's kind of left the rat race and he lives in Hawaii, and he's been just hammering the theme of self-sufficiency for some time, essentially forgetting about whether you're going to double your nest egg or what you should put all your money in. He said the ultimate solution, not plan A or plan B, but plan C, is to achieve self-sufficiency in food, water, and shelter. And, or to, let's say, be as little dependent on others for those things as you possibly can be. So he's been describing in some detail how he has managed to get his house in order in that way. And so, you know, when you ask me what should investors be concerned about, I would say things could unravel to the extent investors should be less concerned about their investments than their survival.
My condo has a lot of green space. It's just lawn. I want to turn it into garden. Should I make a point of bringing that up?
Well, you know, it depends how much green space, really. But, you know, there's a book, classic book from the 1960s, written by a woman named Jane Jacobs. It's called The Death and Life of Great American Cities. And her idea was that the big towers, residential towers with a little patch of grass and a bench, they were never going to survive. You know, you need the place to have organic life, and part of that means lots of foot traffic, people going from one place to another within a complex. So when your office tower and the nearby towers start growing and distributing food growing hydroponically and distributing, your neighborhood may be safe from any further economic decline.
I have a cousin in England. She won a royal award. She uses shipping containers to grow fish and vegetables. The fish are in a tank above. Their droppings are used to fertilize the plants that grow below. And it's the hottest trend for all the top London restaurants. Fresh fish, fresh veggies growing right there in the alley.
There you go. There you go. The New Yorker had, I think it was New Yorker, had kind of a symposium on survivalists, and the Russians, people who have emigrated from Russia, tend to be the really hardcore. They've seen such conditions in Russia that they really know what hard times are. So in this supposed symposium, the one guy was talking about growing apples, you know, having an orchard somewhere along the Hudson where he could transport grown apples to the market without having to depend on diesel fuel or a truck or anything like that. So that's a whole different type of self-sufficiency, you know, just growing apples along a river and bringing them to market in your, well, who knows, your rowboat.
Yeah, and I'm just watching well, it's kind of a documentary where people are recreating the farmers of World War II in Britain, where, of course, most of their food was imported, but the Germans were torpedoing the supply ships. So they had to learn how to grow their own food. And when you really put an effort into it, we have all this empty land space sitting all around us. Why do I have to import vegetables from 3,000 miles away when I can grow them 10 inches from my front door?
Yeah, but when we need them, you know, my brother lives in San Francisco, and he's a couple blocks from one of those. It's a double empty lot that is served as a little co-op, and I can't imagine what's going to happen the day when all the bad things that you use the co-op to prepare for cause the hungry hordes to descend on your little garden there. You know, I guess if you have that garden and we have one of these days, the banks don't open and everything falls apart, you're going to want your backyard garden to be a well-kept secret.
Underground, perhaps.
Well, there's where the hydroponics come in, but, yeah. You know, the experience of the marijuana growers tells you how expensive it is to grow stuff that's worth eating or smoking inside a city high, an office tower. There'll be plenty of space, though, and if you can think of a good way to convert that space to something that people would go for, you could have a table tennis emporium or pocket billiards or something, but there's going to be plenty of space. I know that San Francisco is already at a 40% vacancy rate, and that's coming for all cities.
Is it true San Fran has billboards up, please don't leave the city?
Well, I don't live there anymore, and my sister and brother do. They haven't mentioned those signs, but I'm not sure who would erect a sign like that. The mayor is too stupid to be desperate, and of course, Gavin Newsom has his own way of seeming to be other than desperate. So I don't know. I'd be curious where those signs are, whether they're in my old neighborhood up on Potrero Hill.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. And if anybody wants to sample my newsletter, just rickackerman.com. Go up to the top, and there's a 14-day free trial. Say hello when you come into the chat room. We've got really some of the best traders in the world there. And I think one of the best trading systems that you're ever going to discover.
Rick, thank you again.
All right, Jim, you take care, and I'll look forward to talking to you again in a couple weeks.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. Check out the special offer. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.